Has ME-CFS's time finally come at the NIH? The Vicki Whitmore Interview by Court Johnson, May 13th, 2024. Vicki Whitmore is our go-to person for chronic fatigue syndrome, ME-CFS, at the National Institutes of Health, NIH. Besides overseeing the ME-CFS study grants portfolio since 2013, she and the Trans-NIH Working Group that she and Joe Breen of the NIAID with Director Koroshetz are involved in are responsible for virtually everything of consequence there. With several major events, efforts, and studies occurring, it's been a heady time for the ME-CFS field. The publication of the CDC study that dramatically upped ME-CFS prevalence, the recent NIH ME-CFS conference, the publication of the intramural study, and the completion of the roadmap effort all suggested that the stars might be aligning for ME-CFS at the NIH, and we might be ready to move forward in a big way. Now is a good time to talk to Vicki. You can see the talk in the video below and or read the overview below, which cuts some things and adds others. The talk. Vicki talked about how she got started with ME-CFS. She started out small. How she supports the grant administration process and how the removal of ME-CFS from the Center for Research on Women's Health through the Trans-NIH Working Group into her and Dr. Koroshetz's laps. At that point, she got involved in strategic planning. Vicki said the decrease in funding reflected a gap in the funding of the centers because of a delay in the production of the RFA that funds the center. She believes there are probably more grant applications coming in and from people not involved in the field, which she called exciting. The next round of ME-CFS research centers has been decided and funded, and as soon as the Institutional Review Board, IRB, signs off on them, they will announce which investigators will get the funding. Maureen Hansen, Daria Unutmas, and Ian Lipkin led the last series of research centers. Intramural study. There was the intent to bring people back and enroll new study participants, but it didn't turn out to be feasible. Vicki highlighted the functional MRI findings and T-cell exhaustion findings that replicated past findings. She emphasized, noting the T-cell exhaustion, that we really need to get to clinical trials, and getting to that point was the focus of the research roadmap. NIH-funded ME-CFS clinical trials? Vicki then reported on something novel for this field, the possibility of NIH-funded clinical trials. She's talked to several groups that have submitted applications or are about to submit applications for clinical trials for ME-CFS, including small businesses that are attempting to get small business grants. That's exciting, said Vicki. And it is. My jaw pretty much dropped at that idea. I know of only one NIH-funded clinical trial, Shungu's NAC study, in the history of ME-CFS. Time will tell if they will get funded. The funding environment is very tight right now, but it was good to hear that this is happening. The Collins effect and the new NIH and NIAID directors. The Institute of Medicine report on ME-CFS came out in the mid-2010s. Around that time, investigators and advocates got NIH Director Francis Collins' ear, and he started looking into what the NIH was doing for the disease. NINDS Director Koroshetz got interested around the same time. All this resulted in ME-CFS moving from the Office of Women's Health to getting taken under the NINDS wing a bit. Seeking to move the field forward, the Trans-NIH Working Group came up with the idea of funding ME-CFS research centers. Vicki felt that Collins played a key role in getting many of the institute directors to support the small research centers. Most of them provided quite small amounts, but it did add up. Once Collins left, several institutes stopped providing even minimal funding. What about the new NIH director, Monica Bertagnoli? Vicky stated that she is very aware of ME/CFS and particularly so of long COVID. More importantly, perhaps, Vicky said the new director of NIAID is very, very aware of ME/CFS and is very interested in this disease. That's Dr. Jean Marazzo. Dr. Marazzo was formerly director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Dr. Marazzo came to some parts of the recent symposium. Vicky asserted that where we are now compared to 2015 is like night and day. We know so much more about the biology. There's the long COVID angle, and there's a lot of cross-institute discussion regarding broader initiatives on post-viral issues. Awareness is way up. The roadmap. The research roadmap has been an effort by NIH representatives, ME/CFS researchers, patients, and advocates to take an exhaustive look at ME/CFS biology and provide recommendations on how to move forward with this disease with the intent of producing clinical trials. Led by Vicky, Maureen Hansen, and Lucinda Bateman, the roadmap produced 8-day-long webinars in what was surely an exhausting endeavor as well. Assuming that the NINDS Council approves the roadmap, it will fall to a group of institute representatives called the Trans-NIH Working Group to find ways to implement its recommendations. Vicky discussed creating working groups, consortiums, roundtables. Vicky thought, for instance, that creating genetics consortiums to pull together all that genetics information could lead to clinical trials. If the group found that a gene controlling some part of the immune system was defective in ME/CFS, the group would look for treatments that could bolster that part of the immune system. The idea is to spark interest, and in that vein, Vicky mentioned Paul Huang, an NHLBI researcher outside the field who stumbled upon a bulky gene variant associated with the mitochondria, linked it to ME/CFS, ended up producing a potentially important paper on ME/CFS, and is now attempting to get a clinical trial underway. The key, Vicky said, is validating that variant. Many times, if you find a gene variant, you'll find a group of researchers studying that variant. That happened for her with tuberous sclerosis, where two genes involved in a cancer-related pathway opened the door to cancer labs, which quickly resulted in clinical trials and an approved drug. Dashed hopes. That was all good, and yet the news was not all good. When Francis Collins announced the creation of the intramural study, he said the NIH was looking for solid evidence it could act on. That was why the study went to incredible lengths to make sure they had ME/CFS and only ME/CFS patients in the study. The NIH said it needed solid data to move forward. Now the NIH, not a group of outside researchers, but NIH researchers, have provided it. I took that to mean that once the intramural study was done, the NIH would provide funded grant opportunities called RFAs to explore those areas that draw researchers to them like bees to honey. They are what a struggling field like ME/CFS needs to build momentum. Absent something like that, it's hard to see how ME/CFS springs forward rapidly at the NIH. It's not going to happen, though. If there ever was a plan to use the intramural study findings to support significant new funding for ME/CFS, that plan is long gone. ME/CFS nonprofits asked again to help move the field forward. When I asked explicitly what will happen after the roadmap, my heart sank when Vicky first turned to an old theme, having ME/CFS nonprofits use the roadmap to help move the field forward. The NIH has been asking the tiny, tiny ME/CFS nonprofits to move this massive and complex field forward for decades. It's remarkable to see a 48 billion-dollar institution ask our little nonprofits to move the field forward. But that's what it's done almost from day one. Our nonprofits can't begin to fill the enormous gap between what's wanted and needed and what we have now. It's not as simple as another rejection of MECFS hopes. NINDS, the institute Vicky works for, is in the midst of a budget situation. Bad budget situation. As for the NIH directly supporting MECFS, Vicky referred to the challenging budget situation NINDS is facing in 2024 and probably 2025. The overall budget for the NIH remained flat in 2024, and NINDS received a small increase, which was not enough to account for inflation, resulting in an overall drop in funding. Plus, the Big Brain Initiative received a major funding cut. At the end of April this year, NINDS Director Walter Koroshetz alluded to the difficult decisions that needed to be made given the challenging budgetary landscape and the lower-than-usual 11% pay line, only 11% of best-scored grants get funded, that had to be instituted. Fewer grants will be funded this year, and some already funded grants will see probably modest reductions in funding. While the NIH website states that funding levels for most diseases are expected to largely stay static or increase slightly, the Brain Initiative received a whopping 40% cut, which hurts NINDS in particular. The funding cut resulted from the strange funding mechanism created in the 2016 21st Century Cures Act, which provided fluctuating levels of support from year to year. This year, funding for the initiative from 21st Century was due to drop dramatically. In the past, Congress stepped in to backfill the shortfall, but the budget caps agreed to last spring made that impossible, so funding was cut. For me, though, the budgetary argument fell a bit on deaf ears. While the opportunities for funding are clearly harder to come by in this budgetary environment, I've seen MECFS funding drop dramatically, drastically during times when the NIH was flush. NINDS funding, for instance, has grown by $1.2 billion over the past 10 years and is now at $2.8 billion. Even in this challenging budget environment, it was able to give Alzheimer's a $100 million boost. The support for Alzheimer's is there. It's not there for MECFS. The NIH-funded MECFS Research Centers. The NIH spends about 80% of its funding on investigator-initiated grants, i.e., grant applications that come from outside the NIH, leaving 20% for initiatives that come from within the NIH. The MECFS Research Centers, for instance, came from that 20%. When asked about using some of that 20% for MECFS, Vicky noted the difficulty creating new initiatives now, but not to stop thinking about longer-term initiatives that could be possible in the future. She noted again how encouraged she was about the interest small businesses are showing in this disease. Being creative with what we have was a theme. With regard to the proposed Office for Post-Viral Diseases, Vicky noted that the office could help coordinate research, but that the funding would still come from the institutes, of which neither MECFS or Long COVID is a part of. Noting the strong interest being shown by institutes across the NIH, being able to coordinate research across the many institutes that are now interested in post-viral diseases would be a big win. Broken institution. The NIH is clearly broken. Any institution that purports to have as its goal enhancing the health of the nation, yet which deigns to provide sufficient funding for tens of millions of people, MECFS, fibromyalgia, IBS, POTS, etc., in that nation, is broken. The problem is how the NIH is broken. If it was broken for a major disease, the problem would be fixed. But it's broken for diseases like MECFS and fibromyalgia that don't have the clout to fight back. So they're stuck, stepping back in time. I went back 9 years to an interview with Dennis Mangan, former leader of the Trans NIH Working Group. MECFS was getting $5 million a year in funding at the time, same it was getting in 1993. Adjusting for inflation, MECFS funding at the NIH had dropped by 40% in 20 years. That was in large part probably due to the MECFS program being centered in an office which lacked a funding apparatus. Mangan, who was retired, felt that MECFS would not make it at the NIH without having a home at an institute, which it still lacks. Going over the interview, I was struck by how much we lost when the Federal Advisory Committee on MECFS, CFSAC, was abruptly terminated without explanation in 2018. CFSAC made recommendations to the DHHS leadership and called NIH officials to account for the progress that was being or not being made. Back then, we could at least point to a stream of requests made by the NIH committee, which sometimes, Institute of Medicine report, got acted on. 2004 asks for 5 regional centers of excellence, $1.5 million per year per center of excellence. 2005 asks for 5 regional centers of excellence, $1.5 million per year per center of excellence. 2007 asks for 5 regional centers of excellence, $1.5 million per year per center of excellence. Produces a document explaining why centers of excellence are needed. Notes the complete lack of clinical research centers. Notes high economic costs to the nation. The need to treat and identify treatments rigorously and in an organized manner and get them out to other physicians. 2009 asks twice for 5 regional centers of excellence, $1.5 million per year per center of excellence. 2010, in lieu of asking for centers of excellence, asks the government to fund networking between clinics and develop a national clinical and research network. NIH not immutable. For reasons that we still don't fully know, the NIH is structured in such a way as to make it very difficult for diseases like MECFS or fibromyalgia to make headway. In the 2014 Mangan interview, I noted that Lipkin and others stated that both Collins and Koroshetz's hands were tied when it came to MECFS. Like any other organization, though, the NIH is not immutable. The way the NIH is was not handed down from heaven on tablets of stone. The NIH is what the people in the NIH say it is. If it's not working, they can change it. I would suggest they're at least obligated to the millions of people with chronic debilitating post-viral illnesses to try. Whatever the justifications for keeping the status quo, for example, it's impossible, or it's just the way things are, or look at how well we're doing in other areas. The bottom line is that the NIH has shortchanged a generation of millions of people with chronic illnesses, and everyone working at the NIH has to deal with the fact that they're part of that. Congress. Quote, "We need patient advocates to be out there saying, Congress, we need more money for MECFS research and NIH funding overall." End quote. Vicki Whittenmore. While MECFS's time at the NIH has clearly not finally come, the news for MECFS in general is encouraging. Interest in it and post-viral diseases is up significantly. Vicki feels the field has grown enormously since 2015, and I agree. By bringing together consortiums and think tanks, Vicki Whittenmore is doing what she can with what she has. The great question for Vicki and all of us, though, is when this increased interest will show up in the bottom line, increased funding. there is only one sure pathway to dramatic and rapid change for ME/CFS at the NIH, and that's Congress. That's what Ian Lipkin, who knows the NIH well, said 10 years ago, and that's what he repeated at the recent symposium on the intramural study. Vicky believes so as well, noting that the budget situation may be even worse in 2025. Vicky said, "We need patient advocates to be out there saying, Congress, we need more money for ME/CFS research and NIH funding overall." A couple of weeks ago, Lipkin said we need better advocacy at the congressional level, and we do. During the last advocacy week, I was the only person present at the 5 meetings I had with congressional staffers. Advocacy Week, now run solely by the Solve ME/CFS initiative, is our one big opportunity to make progress where it counts the most, at the federal level. That's simply where the money is. Even in this difficult budget environment, Alzheimer's disease got a nice boost in funding, thanks to Congress. The NIH's $47 billion budget dwarfs, as in, it's not even close, any other medical research funder. It's a nut we must crack at some point. Lastly, Vicky said that working closely with the ME/CFS community over the past year has been one of the most rewarding and meaningful experiences of her working life. She said she read every one of the thousands of comments provided. The roadmap presentation. The roadmap will be presented to the NINDS Council meeting by Vicky, Maureen Hansen, and Lucinda Bateman during an hour-long session from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on April 15th. They did a tremendous amount of work on this effort, and you can watch them make their case for more ME/CFS research in a televised session here. Link in article.